The following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State Athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
All right, guys, a couple of things as we get started here. Big show planned. Big show. Apparently, we could find out at any moment. It could be now. It could be an hour, 2 hours later tonight. We might be finding out our next K-State president.
Whoa! Really?
By the way, you just heard the voice. That was my next big breaking news.
A David G. sighting.
Yeah, whoa, hold on. Are my eyes deceiving me right now?
I'm here. The baby's out in the parking lot. I'm going to be in and out periodically. You know what I mean? Listen.
I hope Child Protective Services isn't listening right now.
You know they are.
Cancel culture's all listening. She's out there. The radio's on. Everything's fine.
Oh, there you
go. Come on, guys.
All right, well, welcome into the game. Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, David G., and Big Steve is across the glass today. We are going to be bringing in Derek Young from KSA Online here in just a moment. Plus, coming up later in the hour, our biweekly interview with Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. In the second hour, Mitch Palm is back. K-State has released their 2022 K-State football schedule, and I'm already telling you, there's a game in there that can really fire up a hot seat real fast.
Yeah.
Number one song of the day, Ask Us Anything, we'll wrap it up. But to start off, Derek Young from KSN Online is with us at DYoungRivals on Twitter. Now, to get us started, today is National Pie Day. So, DY, I need to know what your favorite type of pie is right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, favorite type of pie. That would probably be pumpkin pie, to be quite honest, or apple pie. Those are probably tied at the top.
Let's hear from everybody. I know we kind of talked about it last week, right before Thanksgiving got here. But Troy, I can't remember what yours was.
I'll go with a good apple. I'm good with that. Pumpkin also.
DG?
Just pizza pie? Does that count? Does that count? I'll take that or pumpkin. Like a solid pumpkin pie with a whipped cream. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Love Big that. Steve? Yo, I know it. He says pecan pie. He's from the South.
I remember that.
I'm not from the South. My family's from the South. I still say in normal everyday life, pecan.
Where are you going for Christmas again?
Georgia.
Do you know what part of Georgia?
Yeah, the Savannah Pooler area.
Oh, man. I'm dying to go see Savannah, Georgia.
It's pretty this time of year.
Oh, I think it's pretty any time of the year. Plus, it's like a whole, like, the whole town is like haunted and stuff. So you're going to be like, have people push you in the back and nobody's there. And
the game sponsored by TripAdvisor. Come on down to Savannah, Georgia. What's going on here?
Oh, all right, D Young Rivals on Twitter, DY. Let's jump into K-State here because we'll start with football, of course, because the Cats, they wrap up the regular season 7-5, 4-5 in the Big 12, but they lose their last two games of the regular season to Baylor and then the real disappointing loss at Texas the day after Thanksgiving, 22-17. The offense doesn't score in the second half, but in the grand scheme of things, you look at the record 7-5, compared to your expectations, how did the Cats do in the regular season?
You know, I thought they could push to 8-4 or 9-3, but that 7-5 was probably the most realistic outcome for the 2021 season. So I guess they met the mark, but it's just the ending of the season, the last two games, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, even with Will Howard, you go into that Texas game, you're feeling confident because Texas had been really poor, especially in Big 12 play, of not being able to stop the run. But where the real nuclear heat has been coming from, and this has been obviously a major talking point ever since that game ended, was the play calling. And fans, they weren't happy with the last couple of drives, and K-State, Courtney Messingham and K-State deciding to use Deuce Vaughn in the Wildcat formation, and it worked once but didn't work the next two times when they needed a yard. You see the speed option, which was really K-State's real final last attempt to score in the game, or at least pick up the first down and try to score. Now, when it comes to the play calling, were you just as unhappy about what took place like K-State fans were?
Yeah, I mean, not a whole lot of it made sense. I think that's an honest and appropriate assessment of what we saw in Austin. because they would, you know, they were using Deuce Vaughn and they were going about their way on the offensive side of the ball to the point where it felt like they would grab a few first downs, you know, and, you know, many times grabbing 8-9 yards on the first two plays, setting up a third and short, fourth and short, but on those downs, kind of get away from the bread and butter that had been working against the Longhorns. Not only were, you know, they tried this wildcat formation with Deuce Vaughn in the gun, but they, you know, they're running it to the right side, which is probably a little bit weaker than their left side. So they're not really playing to their strengths. They did the short side of the field option again this last, they did it the week prior with Skylar Thompson in the second half that didn't work. This time you did it with Will Howard on a fourth down, I believe, that gets blown up. So it's just, it was disappointing to see them not play to their strengths as much and almost like they were overthinking a bit on third and fourth down.
Yeah, and going back to your point about running to the left side, I brought that up with Wyatt on Monday where in the second half it felt like K-State just, you know, in the first half, the best three plays of that first half were runs to the left, both Deuce and Will scoring touchdowns on a play to the left, a run play. And then you kind of saw K-State go away from runs to the left in the second half, and I think there was only maybe three or four. And Deuce Vaughn was getting, obviously, the majority of those carries, despite actually, I think the jet sweep to Malik Knowles was even to the right side of the field. But there's also you just see it too often when you hear a coach tell you, we're going to take what the defense gives you. You see it too often where run plays are heading into the direction where you need two guys to block four. You know what I mean? Like, there's just everything has to go right blocking. You need a couple of guys in the defense to make mistakes. Yeah, I agree with you, D.Y. There was a lot that just didn't quite make sense. So after the game, the uproar turns into wanting to see change, wanting to see a new person, offensive coordinator, and even like Colin Klein's name has been thrown out there, maybe looking for a new quarterback coach because of the lack of development we've seen from Will Howard. I want to know your thoughts on if K-State were to make a change in those areas, how quickly does that need to happen? Because obviously, you know, it's a pretty important time for recruiting.
Yeah, I mean, there's two schools of thought. Do you kind of take care of the recruiting aspect first, or do you kind of take care of if you're going to make changes? I mean, we don't absolutely know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there will be changes either. But if I guess my preference would be to kind of get all my ducks in a row and have everyone in a cohesive unit before I go attack the recruiting trail. But sometimes that's not realistic. Sometimes you're kind of in a spot where you need to press the gas button on the recruiting trail. And it's hard to deal with both of those things simultaneously, especially with the, you know, the aggressive early signing period, the transfer portal happening. I mean, this is typically the time of year where you're going to be on the recruiting trail, of course, but it's almost the time of year now because of the transfer portal and the new legislation that allows kids to transfer without penalty. You almost need to be on campus at the same time. It's hard for these coaches to be in two places at once because if you're going to make changes, you need to do that. But if you're going to recruit, you need to do that. But guess what? A lot of your players are considering going into the transfer portal and you need to be back trying to convince them to stay. It's a really problematic time. And it's obviously, I think, probably best to do everything as quickly as you can, but that's just, you know, not always realistic or not always, you know, able to do that. There's a lot of irons in the fire right now. It's a really, I mean, we're all still acclimating to this new era of college athletics too, right? Not just from a media standpoint, but from a coaching standpoint. After the season, you got, are you going to make changes? Are you going to recruit? Are you going to recruit high schoolers, JUCOs, transfer portal guys? Are you going to try to convince some of your own guys to stay? You're trying to assess which super seniors are willing to stay. And it's hard to know your recruiting needs because of all that roster, I guess, question marks on your roster and stuff. And you know, that's not just Kansas State facing those tough questions and those tough tasks. It's everybody, but it's a really just because we haven't adapted to it completely yet and we don't have all the answers of how to approach it yet, we're all kind of like just, you know, winging it really at this point. We're all, you know, going about our business by the seat of our pants because we don't, there's no like guide to do it because this is a first time for most everyone.
Well, and you throw in the fact that you've now got a bowl game on top of that, and so your attention then becomes about another game on your schedule, yet you know you have to be out doing recruiting right now. And do you want to make a coaching change or adjust your staff at that time, even when you've got the bowl game in front of you? You know, it used to be that when you had the bowl game lined up on your schedule, yeah, you had some recruiting you were doing, but it wasn't at the tenor that it needed to be to match early signing period or deal with the transfer portal.
Right. And that's a good, element to this to consider, that in a week they're going to start game planning, or they may have started that now. Just another, you know, item of food on every coach's plate that's having to, you'd rather be in a bowl game than not. I mean, that typically means you were 500 or better, but that just puts another task in front of you that you have to tackle. And let's put it this way. Like, if you're going to approach coaching changes, like, how thin do you put yourself if you try to do it before the bowl game? So that's another element to consider of timing, because you have another football game. Do you really try to, I wouldn't say dismantle, but modify your staff before the final game? Like, you're not done playing football this year. There's another game left on the schedule. Now also, let's bring in the transfer portal back into the equation when it comes to a final game. Like, we've already seen a couple running backs leave or enter the portal, right? Joe Urban and Jakardi Wright. My assumption, and I'm almost 99.9% certain, is that they've already entered the portal. They're not playing in the bowl game. They're not going to be available for that bowl game. Let's hope no other running backs jump into that portal, because all of a sudden now you're really thin at that spot, and you have, what was it, 10 bowl practices? Like, it's hard to practice if you don't have a ton of bodies.
Speaking with Derek Young from K-State Online, speaking of the transfer portal and speaking of those running backs you just brought up that are planning to transfer, you know, there's five Wildcats that are now in the portal. Is the running backs in the portal or anybody else, or the number of transfers so far, is any of that equation right now alarming to you?
No, it's not. I mean, I would say I'll walk it back a little bit. What's alarming to me is that this is now normalcy, because that number is I would put a lot of money on that number doubling at least, and maybe even closer to tripling. And everyone's like, you know, everyone that hasn't really embraced this new era of college athletics probably has got their eyes completely wide open, jaw on the floor by me saying that, like, oh, my, triple. Let's hope it doesn't get to that point. But there's college football programs already close right now. And that's, if you're not there, you're going to be the exception and not the norm, I would say. There is going to be very, very, very few football programs every year that their transfer portal exits or entries from their team, the exit from their team, is in the single digits. They would be lucky to be in the single digits, I think. It's just, and I say it's not alarming because that's what I anticipate, and I think it'll be across the board in college football. But what's alarming to me, and I don't know what a great answer there is, because obviously you can't just say, oh, you can't leave, yeah, especially when college coaches, and you, I mean, let's look at the college coaching carousel. Like, there was that inequity to it, and I recognize that, but and that needed to be addressed. But I don't know that this is really a viable solution, having this many transfers year to year. I mean, basketball has already kind of turned into it, but now we're getting to it in football now, where you're basically, you know, over half of your team is going to be turned over year to year, and maybe that's just something we have to get used to, and it's here to stay. But I would like us to maybe find a happier middle ground.
Speaking with Derek Young from K-State Online, we have Derek around for one more segment, and when we come back, we're going to ask DY about his thoughts on where K-State could go for a bowl game, and where does the Oklahoma job rank with the SEC and the rest of those jobs? We'll talk with DY again when we come back. Here in the first hour of the game, we're speaking with Derek Young from K-State Online. I'm Mitch Fortner alongside Troy Coverdale, David G, and Big Steve is across the glass today. Once again with DY. Derek actually got a pretty interesting question on Twitter just moments ago from Chris. He asked, when it comes to quarterbacks, so obviously, I mean, we don't have to discussion about this. It's clear that K-State will need to get into the transfer portal, try to find a quarterback, because right now, what K-State has right now is certainly uncertain about being the future of K-State. brought up, you know, should K-State go after Ohio State quarterback that's transferring, Jack Miller? But the question I have is, like, first of all, DUI, yeah, bring that Ohio State QB to Manhattan, but he's very inexperienced. He's a redshirt freshman. Should K-State maybe go more in the direction of somebody who is experienced, a year or two under their belt at a school in the FBS? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question, and they need to find an answer. Whether that is someone without experience or with experience, they need an answer at quarterback that solves the problem for at least next season. They can get a one-year guy, three-year guy, but they got to cover their base for next season. If you get an experienced guy that has some productivity in his career, that's probably a safer bet. You're not rolling the dice as much. Whereas if you take someone like Jack Miller from Ohio State, you're projecting still because he hasn't played college football. And a lot of it will have to go off blind evaluation in a way, right? Because maybe you get a look at some of their practice film. I don't know how that goes. But the only actionable film you have of someone like that to know if they're good or not is from high school, and maybe they're a different player than they were then. So that's just hard when we're talking about players that haven't played yet, because there's a reason they haven't played yet. One, it could be that he's a pretty good quarterback. He's just not as good as C.J. Stroud, so he hasn't had an opportunity. Or it could be two, he wasn't as good as everyone thought, and Ohio State has figured that out. They're going to part ways. So that's what makes the transfer portal hard. You got to find out why that player is in there, whether it's just because he hasn't been given an opportunity because the guy above him just beat him out, but he's still a good football player. You have to find out these things. And that some of that stuff, those answers, they're hard to come by.
Speaking with Derek Young from K-State Online. All right, so on Sunday, we are going to find out where K-State is heading for a bowl game. And from what I've heard, there's really three possibilities. You have the Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando, the Texas Bowl in Houston, and then the GuaranteedRate.com Bowl or something like that over in Phoenix. Now, if I was to project it right now, I'd probably say the Texas Bowl is most likely, you know, and then Cheez-It maybe coming in second, but And the Texas Bowl would be most likely against a team from the SEC, Auburn, Mississippi State, you know, maybe one of those teams. But where does Derek Young have K-State projected right now to go?
I would lean towards Texas Bowl, but it's pretty close between the Texas Bowl and Cheez-It Bowl, right? It should be one of those based off where K-State fell in the standings. They would have to be leapfrogged by a very pedestrian, even more pedestrian, like West Virginia or Texas Tech. And because of what happened at K-State 2 years ago when they kind of got stuck in the Liberty Bowl, whereas they probably shouldn't have been in the Liberty Bowl, especially at 8-4, I don't see that happening to them again. The two bowls, I don't know if they're going to work together and kind of figure out what they want, those two being the Cheez-It Bowl and the Texas Bowl, Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando, Texas Bowl in Houston. I kind of prefer Houston because financially and in the pocket, that'll probably work better for me than having to go to Orlando around the holidays. But I think those two are pretty tight in terms of likelihood. Technically, I think Kansas State and Iowa State are basically tied the way that they fell in the standings. Iowa State might have a better Big 12 record. So maybe Orlando and the Cheez-It Bowl is more likely for Iowa State. But we have to remember, Kansas State's never played in that bowl game. Never had a bowl game in Florida. Iowa State was just in Orlando 2 years ago. Sometimes that plays a role into how these bowl games are chosen collaboratively by the athletic directors, you know, the league, the bowl game committee itself. So we'll see how it falls. I still lean towards Orlando for Kansas State, but Houston is probably not far behind or at least pretty even in terms of the likelihood. It just depends how they want to slot Kansas State and Iowa State.
Yeah, I love Orlando. I think even downtown Orlando, which is where Camping World Stadium, it's not too far from downtown. It's like a mile away. There's a bunch of bars and restaurants. Like, it'd be a great time down there for K-State fans. I don't know much about Houston and NRG Stadium and what's around there, if it's kind of boring or not. But I think, yeah, financial aside, you know, those prices, it's going to be a little bit more expensive to go to Orlando. But I got the feeling, you know, K-State fans, they'd rather take the trip to Orlando because that's something that's a place where K-State hasn't played a bowl game yet.
Right. No, it'd be new. So I understand the novelty of it and why that might appeal to Kansas State fans. You know, so, you know, what drives me, what motivates me and my preference is something a little bit different. But yeah, going to the home of Disney World around the holidays, those hotels and those flight prices are not going to be easy to stomach for a lot of people.
And I got to say, this might be a hot take, but I'm not the most impressed about Disney World. I'm not, you know, it's like a lot of people get a lot out of it. I totally get that. But, you know, I'm a thrill ride guy, and there's just not enough there for me, to be quite honest with you.
It's not a big thrill-seeker kind of venue for sure, and it probably is more for the kids, so we're probably not going to get a lot of appeal out of it. The last time I was there, I was really little, and I enjoyed it because the whole Mickey Mouse thing when you're little and all these, you know, characters are pretty cool. But at this point, where I am now, the only thing that might interest me, do they have like drinking around the world thing at Epcot? Mm-hmm. I'd be interested in that, I think.
What about Universal Studios?
Well, you see, I've never done Universal, so that would be the place I go, but it's not like it doesn't have five parks to it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's Universal Studios.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't, I'm not a big Universal Studios kind of, that's probably not going to interest me.
I think I love Universal Studios over Disney World. But anyway, with Derek Young from K-State Online. So let's jump to kind of what it is the big story in the Big 12 this week, and that is Lincoln Riley jumping to USC, which obviously is a shocker. But the Oklahoma job is now in the spotlight of who is going to take the job, who's going to be the next Oklahoma head coach, which – they need to make a statement, right? They need to get a guy that has proven to be a good coach and can continue on the legacy of Oklahoma, even though they are entering now the SEC. Where do you rank? Because we talked about this a lot yesterday. Where would you rank the Oklahoma job compared to the SEC? Because I don't have it like maybe barely top five, maybe five or six.
It's not top five for me. And the current state of that job, notwithstanding, because right now that job's kind of been gutted. Lincoln Riley went no holds barred on his exit, and he's kind of shredded that 2022 class a little bit. He's basically going to make their 2023 class non-existent because that was already a lot of West Coast dudes. They're just going to follow him to Southern California instead. So, and then you have all the roster exits as well. Some of those wide receivers, Theo Weiss, guys like that. I'm kind of reveling in it, but it's kind of unfortunate what's happened to that program in a span of 72 hours. It's pretty unreal. They'll recover to an extent. It's still Oklahoma, but it's no longer, they devalued that job a little bit, and Lincoln Riley probably devalued it a little bit more, which is why there's a lot of turmoil and vitriol towards him at the moment. But, you know, it was probably the second best job, best program. Don't get me wrong. It was the best program in the Big 12, and that can't be argued. Texas has kind of gotten their own way for almost 20 years, it feels like. But the second best job, some people would argue best, was Oklahoma in the Big 12. Well, it's not in the top five, you know, SEC. So they've already devalued it a little bit. LSU, better job than Oklahoma. Georgia, better job than Oklahoma. Alabama, Florida, better job than Oklahoma. Probably leaving some out now that I can't think. So I said, what, LSU, Florida, Texas A&M? You can make an argument. Alabama, Georgia, Florida. Yeah. They've really devalued that job. It's probably going to be viewed, at least over time, maybe not initially, probably viewed similarly to Auburn, and quite frankly, in my opinion, because there's just a lot of good jobs in the SEC that have the resources that Oklahoma has had in the Big 12. And that Oklahoma is not going to be so unique anymore.
Derek David here. I don't know if you saw on Twitter, Bob Stoops last week kind of got the gang back together a little bit as like they had a reunion of sorts. And Mark Mangino was there. There are a couple other guys. I know he's going to step in as an interim, or that's at least the word. Do you see a kind of Bill Snyder-esque calming of the waters? Bob Stoops comes in. Takes over as far as the transition to the SEC goes, just to say, because right now it feels like the fan base and the department, the athletic department, they're on tilt a little bit here. So it's like if they go and rush into a pick, because they just have to get somebody, it's not going to be a
a level-headed kind of pick. It's going to be one of those, like, let's get somebody right now. We got to go. Why not have the old gang get back together for one more? I mean, the Turnpike Troubadours got together. They got back together. Why not get the old guys back together? What do you think about that?
I wonder if that doesn't become like a consideration or a resort at some point. And I actually joked about it on Twitter as soon as it happened, you know, especially since Bob Stoops was being named the interim coach. Now, I don't know if that'll entail Mark Mangino on the staff necessarily, but I mean, I don't know that it's completely far-fetched at this point because, like you said, they are on tilt. They're overreacting a little bit. I mean, they were scrutinizing Brent Venables' watch and a recruiting picture, but Jaron Kanick, when he visited Jaron Kanick, the Clemson commit from Hayes. So they're certainly not acting rationally right now. I think there was a report from, I think, the Oklahoma Rival site, so on the network that I'm a part of, that was trying to say that Dabo Swinney is like a potential candidate. Like, that seems like we're kind of just shooting to the moon a little bit and not being realistic. If that happens, then, you know, call me out, whoever's listening, but I just don't see that as being like grounded at all. Like, and they tried to say Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, was coming back to college to take the job as well. They continued to throw out these big time names that probably aren't realistic anymore, because like I said, that job is devalued a little bit. Then I wonder how much it would take, as you're suggesting, for maybe Bob Stoops 2.0. He's already going to coach in the bowl game, so, you know, how much further do we have to go to that becomes a real consideration, or is he interested? I don't get the sense that Brent Venables is going to go there. I realistically don't know who a viable candidate is for them at this point, unless, you know, we're talking about Jeff Levy, the offensive coordinator at Ole Miss, who's working for Lane Kiffin. I don't know. Like, at some point, we keep getting down this line far enough, then maybe Bob Stoops becomes a little bit more satiable and, I guess, appeals to the appetite of the Oklahoma administration. It wouldn't shock me, but at some point, you have to wonder what kind of staff he's going to be able to put together if he were to do that, and how much it would be composed of a staff or assistants that can really perform in this modern era. Because I don't know if Bob Stoops and the way he does business is necessarily a good mix with this new age of college athletics either.
I mean, you know, just my thought. I think Oklahoma is just a little bit too focused on hiring a coach with a name. They were embarrassed and they were caught off guard with Lincoln Riley going to USC, who is right now 4-7 and about to play Cal. What's that?
Matt Campbell. They should consider Matt Campbell. And I know the fans are laughing, and their fans apparently just are revolting against the possibility or even potential candidacy of Matt Campbell. But we could say all we want about Matt Campbell. We make fun of him. You know, me, you, a lot of us in the K-State world, we do make fun of him, probably more so because of the school that he's associated with. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be a good candidate for Oklahoma that they should consider.
D.Y., real quick, we don't have really much time to talk basketball at all, but I'll just ask you this last question about your thoughts, because we didn't talk to you last week, just your thoughts on play in Kansas City and what you see happening tonight.
I'll be quick here. Kansas City was a little bit disappointing. I feel like you probably hoped to grab one win there. You probably thought you'd play Cincinnati at least once and not both Illinois and Arkansas, which may be a little bit unfortunate, but, you know, Cincinnati thumped Illinois. There is a big gap right now between where Kansas State is at the moment and where they need to be in order to clinch an NCAA tournament berth. They got a long way to go. Now, it's not as low as what they were this time last year. This time last year, they were still the team that could lose to Fort Hays State by double digits. So we've come a long way since then, but there's still a long ways to go. So they have a lot of work in front of them. They should win comfortably tonight. If they don't, then it's another, you know, game where you kind of grimace a little bit because you weren't as good as what you needed to be. Like, we probably glossed over it too much, but remember when they played Omaha a couple weeks ago? I think they won that game by 15, or maybe it was 10. They beat somebody by 10, somebody by 15 between Omaha and Florida A&M. Well, since then, Omaha's lost to Purdue by 56 and Texas Tech by 57. I don't like the whole transitive property there, but that doesn't feel good to me.
D.Y., good stuff once again. We'll see you in Bramlage in a little over an hour.
All right, I'll see you there.
That's Derek Young from K-State Online. At DYoungRivals is where you can follow him on Twitter. And go subscribe to Rivals. Right now, a lot of content being pumped out when it comes to recruiting and what's going on with K-State Athletics right now.
I'm just curious, for Oklahoma's sake, who's the modern-day Howard Schnellenberger that we could get them?
Bob Stoops. I'm telling you, man. Listen, he's going to get the old gang back together.
Oh, boy.
For one more ride. That's what they need, because they ain't got nobody. They got one coach, a grad assistant, that does the sideline. He's the sideline guy. That's all they got left. They need somebody to come in and help them transition in, because, like I said, they're going to pull the trigger on some dope that ain't going to do nothing. And then it's going to be weird to see Oklahoma not at that level that we are used to. Back to the John Blake era Oklahoma Sooners, where they are just horrid.
All right, guys, we got to take a timeout because when we come back, Mitch Holtz is voice of the Chiefs on the game. It's the game on KMAN. Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, David G, and of course Big Steve is across the glass. Now talking with the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtz. Mitch, thank you for your time. Kansas City, they continue their roll before a bye week. They've won four in a row after a 19-9 victory over the top offense in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys, in Kansas City, 7-4 on the year. First of all, I want to ask you about how was your bye week? How'd you spend your time that it was Thanksgiving week?
It was good. A little bit of everything, a little bit of family time. Had to work up until Wednesday, but took Friday off, and man, it was great. Got a little rest and Christmas decorations, a little Clark Griswold, and good to go. Watched some football. Disappointed about K-State Texas, but liked the fact that the Broncos won last week. Hoping they'd lose this week, but after the smoke clears, there's four teams in the AFC West, all have winning records, and only one game separates the first and the bottom. But 5 weeks ago, I don't think anybody or very few would have predicted the Chiefs would be first place by themselves.
Yeah, especially after beating the Cowboys, which that you go into that game and you consider it, you know, the Chiefs really have to play a solid 60 minutes offensively and defensively. But the defense, they stole the show. You have coming in and making 3.5 sacks, Chris Jones. I mean, the Chiefs sacked, the Cowboys sacked Dak Prescott 5 times in that game. How lights out has the Kansas City defense been lately?
Well, let's start with Chris Jones. What he did against the Dallas Cowboys was a rarity. I'm not exactly sure, even with doing the games of the late Derek Thomas and Neil Smith, that I saw anything like it. Very Aaron Donald-like in the fact that if you look at his line, I said on Twitter, it's like a triple-double from Steph Curry, and somebody says like a quadruple-double, and they were right. Because if you look at his line, he had 5 tackles in the game, really 4 sacks. He had 7 other pressures of the quarterback. He had a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, a tip pass that led to the game-sealing interception. He beat the right tackle. He beat the right guard, who's a perennial Pro Bowler. He beat the left guard twice, and he beat the left tackle. The only one he didn't beat was the center, and he didn't line up over the center. So it was just a dominating performance by Chris Jones, and really a historic one. Overall, the defense now, numerically here, you can plug in the empirical data here, they're number one in the league in the last 4 games. I mean, they're averaging less than 12 points a game allowed. And hopefully they can continue that, because it's very similar. It's very congruent to the 2019 season.
Speaking with Mitch Holtz, the voice of the Chiefs, how do you see this game going a different way, though, if Dallas is healthier, missing an offensive lineman, CeeDee Lamb gets injured, and they were not too healthy offensively?
Wait a minute. They still had Zeke Elliott. He had 32 yards on 9 carries. They still had Tony Pollard, one of the more underrated backs in the league. He only ran for 50 yards outside of one 31-yard direct snap. CeeDee Lamb did play a half, and that's an interesting game you can play, because everybody wants to throw rocks at the Chiefs' first 7 games at 3-4, but they don't talk about not having Tavarius Ward or not having Willie Gay Jr. or not having Frank Clark and Chris Jones healthy. you start doing that, you can do that really throughout every game and every team throughout the season. There was still enough on the field, and Dak Prescott had probably his worst day of the year. And that wasn't all due to just missing Amari Cooper to COVID or having CeeDee Lamb go out at halftime. There were a lot of great defensive plays in that game made by the Chiefs. And now, for four consecutive games, the Chiefs have held the opponent running game in check. Well, let's go through these running backs. I mentioned Ezekiel Elliott and Pollard. Before that, it was Josh Jacobs and, Kenyon Drake. And then also in this little span of time is Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. So six pretty good running backs the Chiefs have held in check, whether the teams are fully healthy or not.
Yeah, there's no doubt. For some reason, Amari Cooper escaped my mind for just a moment. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Kansas City's defense was so good, and especially after Patrick Mahomes, there was a couple of turnovers and holding the Cowboys to 3 points multiple times. So with the bye week, what would you say the storyline of the bye week was for Kansas City?
Well, hopefully when we still are hopefully going to get cleared on this, hopefully staying COVID clean. That would be that was the main goal going into the bye week. Two would be a physical refreshing, which always happens, especially with a guy like Travis Kelce, who's now played 4,050 snaps in 3 3/4 years. No guy in the NFL has played more snaps than Kelce, and he needed this rest physically. But I think emotionally and mentally, there was a rest from then stepping back and going over this 11 weeks, which has been a lot of twists and turns, that how differently the Chiefs have had to play. For 7 months in the NFL, basically, all we do is talk, and we create scenarios and thoughts and predictions, and many times those become set up for this cloud of pseudo-reality. Well, you don't know until you start playing. And the point being, the Chiefs have had to play different offensively. They're not putting up 40 points a game. The defense has had to go through some discussion and had to go through some evaluation and understand who they've got, when they've got, what they can play and what they can't play. So all that has led to a 7-4 record, and the Chiefs have the division championship in front of them if they take care of business. And it would be an unprecedented sixth consecutive time to win the division. So you look back on it and you go, okay, well, this is the way we're going to have to play here the next 6 weeks to win the division and maybe still try to have a shot at the one seed. But it's physical, mental, and emotional. And, of course, we know Andy Reid is fantastic off byes at 19-3 in his 22 previous weeks after byes. In December, he has only 4 December losses in the 5 years the Chiefs have won the division title consecutively. And of those 4, only one has been a division game in December. So his December record overall has been spectacular, and obviously his week after byes.
Speaking with Mitch Holthus on the game, I was at the Cowboys-Chiefs game, and like I predicted and like was expected, I mean, the place was just electric, even up the nosebleeds. People were going nuts when the Chiefs run third down and on defense and making stops. It was a fun environment for sure, and I'm sure it's going to be pumped up this Sunday night when they host the Denver Broncos, but I think for a bigger reason, and that is because the Broncos are a factor this year in the AFC West. We've seen many years lately with the Chiefs winning the West that the Broncos weren't exactly close, weren't exactly knocking on the door to win the division. Well, they're a game back of Kansas City right now. Is this one of the biggest Chiefs-Broncos games we've had in some time?
Since 15. 15, maybe 16. People kind of forget about history. In 16, the Chiefs had to scramble to win the division, but it was primarily a 12-win Raider team that they had to knock out. And then in 18, the Chiefs had to knock out a 12-win Charger team. But there has not been a 12-win Bronco team in this span. 15, we know the Broncos won the Super Bowl 50 championship, but people forget this streak of 11 straight Kansas City Chiefs victories over the Broncos. Again, that's historic in the series history. Started with a 2015 wiping out of the Broncos in Denver. There were 11 possessions, 5 turnovers by Peyton Manning in the game, and 6 3 and outs. That started this new era. It reminded me of the 1994 game when K-State beat KU in a Thursday night game on the road. And I know that seems like ancient history, but since that time, I mean, K-State's won 25 games to only 4 for Kansas, and 3 of those 4 Kansas wins came against Ron Prince. Well, I left the stadium that night, and although it's a long time ago, because they could wow, the earth has changed. Well, that game in 2015, when the Chiefs were able to beat Peyton Manning and the Broncos, I was thinking, the earth has changed, because the Chiefs haven't lost since then, and basically a lot of the games, most of the games haven't been close. But for the Chiefs to dominate the series like they have was unthinkable at one point, either in the Peyton Manning days or even in the late 90s.
These next three games for Kansas City is actually quite crucial. They're against all teams in the AFC West. Mitch, when it comes to Denver, though, what are your concerns about the Denver Broncos this year?
Very difficult to score upon. They have a very good defense. Their secondary might be the best in the league. At least it's top three or five. Surtain is for real. Patrick Surtain, the second, is worthy of the pick that the Broncos made on him. So showed that last week. Simmons is an outstanding safety, one of the best in the league. Darby is a good corner, good cover corner. They were able to pressure Justin Herbert last week, 19 pressures, 7 by Draymond Jones himself. They sacked him 3 times. There were 3 other holes on the Chargers. They may give up some yards to the Broncos, but they're very difficult to score upon. Good red zone defense, top 10 in the league, and top 3 in offensive points allowed. That takes away, that's a category you take away defensive scores and special team scores and leave it purely what an offense scores against them, and they're 3rd in the league. Only New England and the Buffalo Bills have allowed fewer points. That will get your attention if you're an opponent playing the Denver Broncos.
7:20 this Sunday night from Arrowhead Stadium, taking on the Denver Broncos. Mitch, before I let you go, yesterday on the show I had Coach Bill Snyder on to talk about his autobiography. Do you have a copy of his new book yet?
I do not. In fact, I just got a note from him today, but no book. Like, dude, he guess he wants me to buy it. You know, I guess I'll buy some for you guys for Christmas.
I love one.
You know, things get tough for Coach, man. I mean, I look at those license plates, I think he's getting everywhere I see him. There's royalties coming for the man. But, you know, hey, life gets tough everywhere, so I guess I'll buy one. But no freebies from Coach for the old voice of the Wildcats.
You know, we got to crack out because we've been going through his book. I got an online copy of it. And
yeah.
And Troy over here found out that in the book you can actually find the whole Snyder soundtrack, all the pregame music listed in the book, which I think is awesome that you have all that listed there. Do you have a favorite Snyder soundtrack song that you always enjoyed hearing?
Oh, you know what I loved about the soundtracks, and I'll still hear the songs, and I sometimes just freeze and stop whatever I'm doing. But we had motivationals that were way ahead of their time in the 90, 91, 92, 93 range, and they were awesome. Somebody put one up on YouTube at one point, and I thought, wow, they better be careful with those. But they were propaganda at its best. But there were those songs from the early 90s eras. Oh my gosh. And they're fantastic. In fact, my son, who was young at the time, we still laugh about those. And I've still got them tucked away someplace, but I'm not going to share them on social media. But honestly, they're priceless.
All right, Mitch, we got to go. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, if you see the one before the Missouri game with Bob Stoll, I wish I could show because Andy Reid was on that staff. I wish I could find it. Oh, my gosh.
All right, hour 2 of the game is up next.